The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as part of our coverage of important issues related to your health, you know, we talk diet, we talk exercise, we talk about natural practices like acupuncture, meditation, but an important aspect of things that pertain to our health and our well-being, the political scene, because the political scene influences our health choices. And because of that, I've made a commitment to get you timely information about certain health issues that may impact your access to therapies that you prefer. Freedom of choice in healthcare is something that's very big for me. I personally serve on the board of directors of something called the ANH, the Alliance for Natural Health. And today we bring to you the Chief Communications Officer of the Alliance for Natural Health. He's Tim Rhyme. And Tim's going to provide us with a timely update on some important issues which face us as consumers, not just of vitamins and supplements, but of food and air and everything that's important for our well-being. And he comes to us from Washington, D.C., well, actually across the river, across the Potomac in Arlington, Virginia, where ANH is situated, because we really want to be in the belly of the beast, so to speak, having an influence on federal policy, which governs many of our choices. So welcome, Tim. It's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine.
Ron, it's great to be here. I really appreciate you allowing us to come on and speak to your viewers or to your listeners.
Right. Viewers, not so much.
Well, that's good, because I have a face for radio rather than TV, so I'm in the right place.
Well, you can watch our podcast as well. You just won't see any moving images. Okay, so first of all, tell us a little bit about the Alliance for Natural Health, the ANH.
Sure. Well, the Alliance for Natural Health is part of an international advocacy group, and really we work on behalf of the entire natural health community. So that includes your listeners, you know, the consumers out there, but it also includes practitioners like yourself who are, you know, interested in practicing medicine without losing access to some of the things you depend upon to give the best, you know, service and treatments to your patients. We also work on behalf of those companies and manufacturers that provide products for the natural health community, supplement companies, botanical companies, organizations like that. So we really work on behalf of the entire community, and we do that in a number of ways. You know, one of the ways we work is to educate. So we put out the Pulse of Natural Health, which is our weekly newsletter, where we try to keep people updated on sort of the latest happenings, you know, what's going on that they really need to be concerned about and aware of.
Let me just interject for anyone who is interested in intelligent medicine, who follows intelligent medicine. If you listen to these podcasts, you absolutely must get the Pulse of Health, because a lot of the information that we talk about, you get really very, very punctual updates and dispatches in the Pulse of Health. So tell people how to get that.
Absolutely. It's very easy. All they have to do is visit our website, and right there on our homepage, they can sign up. It's anh-usa.org, and just put in your email address, and you'll start receiving it right away. And it goes out every Tuesday, and we really try to, you know, touch on those issues that we feel are most important for people to know about, the sort of cutting-edge topics.
And what do you have? You have a couple of hundred subscribers to that? How you doing?
Yeah, we're up around just under 500,000 subscribers right now. Yeah, we've experienced an incredible amount of growth over the past 12 months. You know, we've more than doubled our number of subscribers, and I think the the reasons behind that are people are really hungry for this type of information. You know, they're not going to get it in the mainstream press, and so they're looking for, you know, sort of the other side of the equation. And so, you know, we've really been blessed to have a real growth spurt in terms of our membership.
And I really consider this like a Paul Revere kind of newsletter, because you get the word out in action alerts about very, very important and timely issues. And you get people emailing and calling on the phone, contacting their representatives. And really, democracy works in several ways. Voting, okay, fine, yeah, but you know, sometimes that vote really doesn't seem to make much difference. But when you exert your influence directly on your congressman or woman or on a federal agency, and they're inundated with, as has happened with some of A&H's campaigns in the past, they stand up and listen. So just before we get into today's topics, can you enumerate some of A&H's previous successes in influencing regulations or legislation?
Sure. Well, I think one of the things we're going to talk about today is compounding. And, you know, that's been an issue that we've been really proactively, involved in over the past couple years. In 2013, Congress passed the Drug Quality and Security Act. And so we sort of got involved in that process pretty early because there were a lot of really draconian measures that were included in that law. So we got our, sort of our force involved.
Just for our listening audience, where we talk about compounding, I think, we have to define it a little bit for our listeners. Compounding pharmacies are pharmacies that are specialty pharmacies that I personally rely on. You know, I can't think of a day that goes by in my practice when I don't interact with a compounding pharmacy. A patient may say, gee, I'd really like to take a certain medication, but I'm allergic to gluten. Can you get me a form of the medication that doesn't have gluten in it? Or alternatively, I need a very, very low dose of a medication, perhaps something that in a higher dose is going to cause that patient to react, or maybe to compound some kind of special cream, bioidentical hormones, natural thyroid, the intravenous ingredients that I use for patients who get chelation therapy and Myers cocktails and intravenous vitamin C. A lot of that stuff comes from compounding pharmacy, so it literally I could not function without having the use of these excellent and small and nimble pharmacies.
Yeah, absolutely, and they're facing increasing threats, and so we've done that on an ongoing basis where we'll put out an action alert to our members, and that's why it's important that our membership roster is growing, because the larger we get, the more influence that we're able to exert on behalf of these causes that we all depend on. As a result, we were able to make changes. We were able to put enough pressure on, Congress and subsequently the FDA when they took over in the regulation process to take some of the sharper edges off of this legislation. And it's, certainly something we're still continuing to work on. But that's sort of the way we work. We try to isolate issues. We educate our members about those issues. And then we push them to get involved, because it's great to be informed about these issues, but this is an active democracy where we all sort of have to let our voices be heard. And so we provide those tools. We let them get their voice heard and to enact real change, in helping to shape how this legislation actually looks at the end of the day.
Well, tell us how this compounding pharmacy situation is coming along, because, I personally see this as one of the biggest threats to people's freedom of choice in terms of health care, because the very medications that patients depend on, oral medications, some certain natural products, they're all coming in the line of fire because of regulatory zeal by the federal government, by state and local governments who want to get in on the act to, quote, safeguard the public from harm. And I get it, because I think there needs to be quality control, there needs to be oversight. But some of the stuff that they've been proposing has been really outrageous. So can you enumerate some of the main points here?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, so over the last year, after the initial law was passed, then obviously it goes over to the FDA, who starts to develop the rules to sort of, flesh out how this law actually looks. So, I always think of it in terms of, the Congress passes the law and that sort of gives you the skeleton. The meat, you know, the actual flesh on the law are the rules that are put in place that, you know, sort of show how this is going to work in the real world. And so that's what's been going on over the last year. The FDA began releasing the rules that, you know, were to honor sort of the guidelines set up by Congress in the Drug Quality and Security Act. Some of these things are quite frightening, actually. There are some things that we're very concerned about. There are some limitations on office use, which, you know, is something I know that you're very concerned about, because right. This is going to impact how you are able to practice medicine. And, you know, the restrictions that they're placing on office use, for instance, are extremely frightening.
Office use of like intravenous substances or natural chelation products, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, any kind of essentially this boils down to the FDA has come forward with these new rules saying that in order to administer some sort of, you know, compounded medicinal preparation in your office, you have to have an individual prescription. So essentially you would, you know, see a client, a patient who came in, you know, if they had a sports injury, for instance, you would have to write an individual prescription for, you know, that injured person. They would have to then go to the compounding pharmacy, get it, get the prescription filled, and then come back to your office to have it administered.
Yeah.
Right. Because in order to use these things in the office, you have to have a certain supply of compounded medications on hand so that you can administer them as needed.
We can't stockpile things. You know, I tell you, from my standpoint, it's getting much harder to deliver the intravenous therapies that we've perfected over the years. So getting the ingredients is harder and harder. It's more and more expensive. Fewer and fewer companies are prepared to put up with the bureaucratic rigmarole that's associated with compounding specialty nutrients. And I'm not talking about strange esoteric things. I'm not talking about intravenous rattlesnake venom. I'm talking about just basic stuff like, you know, intravenous vitamin C, selenium, zinc, all the basic components that go into the B vitamins that go into an IV. It's getting harder and harder for us to do, and it's getting more expensive, frankly. It involves a lot of work and effort on our part, and a lot of wastage, because they say, well, you know, once you, you know, use it once, throw it away. Well, okay, well, if you don't have five patients to utilize it on a given day, and we have to reorder it because of these stringent guidelines, the price goes up astronomically. And then ultimately the patient has to bear the burden of it. It may price some patients out of the game in terms of obtaining these therapies. They get to be astronomically expensive.
Yeah, and we're starting to get those stories in, you know, from a lot of physicians that we work with, you know, some of the anecdotal evidence of the dramatic increase that we're seeing, even though, you know, we're sort of just in the rulemaking period, you know, so a lot of this stuff isn't even being enforced yet, and yet, because there's so much uncertainty in the industry about how this is going to be implemented, we're already seeing, you know, that certain prescriptions are becoming harder to get, that when they can get them, they're becoming more expensive. And, you know, it just begs the question, what's going to happen once this is fully enforced if we aren't, you know, able to tone down some of these restrictions?
And you can even hear the sirens in the background as the FDA inspectors descend on our clinic. I think that's actually, that's just typical New York ambient sound that we hear from time to time on our podcast. But not true. You know, we're okay. So this is, you know, obviously a disservice to people who access complementary medicine. Compounding pharmacies also make hormone preparations, so-called bioidentical hormones, and those are very, very important for women as an alternative to conventional hormone replacement therapy, which uses synthetic hormones, and they really rely on it. And similarly for men, and to some extent women who receive testosterone and some of the natural hormones, natural thyroid, for example, that, you know, some of the regulations may actually preclude the use of certain things, correct?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so much happening in this arena right now, and it's such an uncertain time. You know, just I think 2 weeks ago, the U.S. Pharmacopeial Convention, USP, released a draft proposal which, you know, has the potential of really crushing a lot of small compounding pharmacies, because what they've done is they've sort of mandated procedures for handling what they're labeling as hazardous drugs. Now, you know, USPs, this really isn't their domain. I mean, they're an authoritative standard-setting body. You know, they work to set up things like the identity and strength and quality for different medicines and food ingredients and dietary supplements. So, you know, that would be their normal purview. But they have sort of stepped in and put this draft proposal together that essentially says, okay, we're creating a list of hazardous drugs. And in order to work with these hazardous drugs, you're going to need, you as a small compounding pharmacy on the corner of the street, are going to need to do certain things. You know, you're going to have negative pressure rooms. You're going to have separate spaces for handling different types of materials. I mean, we're talking, you know, the potential for hundreds of thousands of dollars of construction costs to accommodate these new standards that they're suggesting, in order to work with what they're calling hazardous materials, like these hormone therapies, you know, things that are administered on a day-to-day basis by nurses and nursing assistants, even self-administered in a lot of cases.
Right. So, I mean, applying a cream to the skin would not seem as dicey as administering a steroid directly into the spinal cord, as you know, was triggered this whole controversy because contaminated steroid medication was injected directly in the spinal cords of some patients for treatment of back injuries, and it was devastating. And okay, I get it, because, well, of course, the compounding pharmacy in question literally shared its facility with a junkyard. And, you know, there was like way out of bounds in terms of their safety precautions. But actually, this wasn't an accident that occurred in a holistic clinic, in a natural medicine clinic. This is an accident that occurred in doctors' offices and hospitals utilizing a conventional medicine procedure. And somehow the blowback seems to most impact natural medicine practitioners.
Yeah, you have to wonder about the motivation, you know, what the USP is doing in this case, because, I mean, really what they're talking about an issue of worker safety, right? Because, you know, they're talking about the handling of these materials, that somehow workers are going to be compromised, so that, you know, if you're a nurse in an office, if you're handling, you know, bioidentical estriol or something, that somehow that might endanger you. And that's really a question for OSHA or the EPA or some other organization. It's really not out within their purview. You know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, what actually started this whole thing happening, you know, back in 2012 when NECC, you know, shipped out all of those tainted, fungal meningitis. They had sent out some, you know, injections that were tainted. And that was one incident, right? It was an isolated incident from a bad actor that wasn't functioning at industry standards. The FDA had 10 years to sort of deal with this bad actor. They'd over and over and over again had demonstrated that they weren't doing business the right way. The FDA failed to step in. And, you know, as a result, we had the tragedy of 2012 that has led to this whole mess.
And it sort of recalls the Rahm Emanuel's dictum, never let a good crisis go to waste, because they can leverage this crisis to enact their dream legislation, which, you know, all these agencies are always looking for more purview and control. That's their raison d'etre, in fact.
Absolutely, and you saw that in this case. I mean, you know, when you know, Congress went back and looked at what happened, they came to the conclusion that this was the FDA's fault. You know, the reason we had this this terrible incident was that the FDA was not doing their job. And so what does Congress do as a result? They give the FDA more power. You know, pass a bill that greatly increases the scope of what the FDA can do in regards to compounding pharmacies. And, you know, as a result, we're dealing with all of these little issues that are really detrimental to the industry as a whole.
Well, it's a little bit like if your kid, you know, was out partying and they crashed the 1999 Toyota, and you said, well, you know, that shouldn't have happened. I'm going to give you a new big 2015 BMW so that you know, you can party safer. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
No, absolutely. I think, as we've gone through this process, I mean, we've seen we're able, you know, and so it sounds really dismal. And this is something that's very important. It's important for all of your listeners out there, because this is something that they depend on, that so many of us depend on, you know, on an ongoing basis. And we run the risk right now of losing compounding pharmacies. I mean, some of these measures, I mean, you know, when you're talking about, you know, making a small mom and pop compounding pharmacy, you know, invest several hundred thousand dollars in order to stay in business, it's gonna drive a lot of people out of the industry, and we're gonna have a decrease in access for consumers, and that's frightening. You know, this is a part of medicine that works, and it has worked for a long time, and because we're sort of overreacting to one isolated incident, we're really threatening an entire industry as a result, and it's sort of sad, but. You know, we believe that we can still stop this, and you know, so that's why we're really thankful that you're getting the word out there, and that you know, people can get involved and step up and say, you know what, we've got to maintain this. This is something that we need.
Well, what are some of the fronts that ANH is working on to inform legislators and push back on this?
We actually created a standalone mini website that's dedicated to this issue. It's savecompounding.org. And what we've done there is we've sort of aggregated, you know, some of the news that's relevant to this issue. So, you know, people that might not know that much about the issue can go there and sort of see what's happening, get the latest information. And then we have an action center on there where, you know, they can see our latest action alerts that relate to this issue. So, you know, for instance, we talked about the USP draft proposal. You know, they can go to the website and fill out a form and get a letter sent over to USP saying, you know, why are you doing this? This is not right. Let's rethink this. So, you know, we're just trying to empower people to be able to say something about this and to sort of stem the tide of this flow that's going against the compounding industry right now.
And for most of these initiatives, you provide convenient boilerplates, so people basically all they have to do is sign their name and click, and it gets sent off. But actually, I think even more persuasive would be personal stories from people who say, look, I depend for my very well-being on this or that or the other treatment that is in the crosshairs that may be threatened by restrictive regulations and legislation. And I'd like to tell you that as a citizen, I feel that my rights are infringed upon. I think that would be very cogent for the powers that be.
Yeah, and we tend to do that. I mean, you know, so when they use the tool on our website, there is a letter there, but people are free to customize those and add their own stories. And I absolutely agree with you, Ron. I think it's always good for legislators to have to face their constituents and say, hey, this is how this affects me. I'm a real person. I really vote, and this affects me in this way. And I think that's so much more powerful.
Great. All right. This is a good point at which to pause, because we divide our podcast into two parts. There's a lot more going on at ANH, the Alliance for Natural Health, in terms of the initiatives they're following. And you can check it all out at anh-usa.org. In part two, we're going to focus on some of the things that you're doing to get the word out about the situation in New York. We've covered it here on Intelligent Medicine, which the Attorney General of the state of New York has seen fit to issue a cease and desist order to four major retailers claiming that the supplements they're selling are totally worthless. So we'll examine that issue. We'll also talk a little bit about what's happening on the GMO front, because with the introduction of yet another Frankenfood, the GMO apple, ANH has been in the vanguard of raising public awareness about issues related to full disclosure about GMO ingredients. Our guest is Tim Rheim. He's Chief Communications Officer for the Alliance for Natural Health. We'll be right back. We hope you join us for part two of today's podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.